Thanks to all of you for coming in. Of course, I recognize a large number of you. Thanks for taking the time for that. You'd think that over the last week and a half, you might have heard enough of me. But at least I think for those of you who are in my class, you're going to find that this is a little bit different from what we've talked about before. As Dr. Chung mentioned, I want to talk about web science. Now, how many of you are actually familiar with the term web science? You know what it means? Okay. As he mentioned, I did give a talk, it was a couple of years ago, about it. I don't know if any of you came to that. Anyone came to that? But in any event, I am going to give a brief overview of what it is, so it really doesn't require that you're here before. And so, one thing I like to say at the beginning of this, I feel really lucky in some ways to sort of been present at the what I consider to be the birth of a significant new science. You don't get to do that too often. But I guess, you know, the way technologies change, you know, maybe it's going to become more often. But the point is, it's significant when all of a sudden you see a discipline that didn't exist before, and it matures to the point where really then it's worthy of an independent study of its own, not being a sub-study of some other branch of science. And I want to try to convince you that that is, in fact, what is happening in the case of web science. And so this is a slight overview, an agenda of what I plan to cover tonight. First is to tell you what web science is, and then talk about some of the efforts around the world that's going on to actually start a web science curriculum. And then some examples of web science research. I picked some that I think that you'll find intriguing and interesting. Next is to reach some conclusions, because the title of this was to say, you know, what is the current status of web science? So I have to give something that at least appears to be an activity report, and then give some references. And so that's basically going to be, you know, what I hope to cover tonight. But one thing I want to do, too, is keep this as open as possible. This isn't that large a group, so if you've got questions, you know, raise your hand and feel free to interrupt me. Or comments as well, not just questions. Okay, so this won't work. Through there. I don't know. The remote seems to have... The remote seems to have given up the ghost. But anyway, I can always use this. Now get rid of that. Let's see. All right. So the first thing I should mention is about the Web Science Trust. Because the whole control, as it were, or even the invention of web science, you know, really originated with the Web Science Trust. It used to be called the Web Science Research Institute. And it began as a collaboration between MIT and the University of Southampton in the UK. One of its original founders was Tim Berners-Lee, you know, who is the inventor of the web. And the stated purpose, as I have here, of the Web Science Trust was really to go beyond simply the technical definition of the web and to try to formalize the social aspects of it and the collaborative aspects of it and the network aspects of it and understand and bring together people, scientists, practitioners from a lot of different disciplines all over the world to try to understand, namely, what this phenomena is that has occurred ever since the web was introduced. And that phenomena, of course, is what we call web science. But more fundamentally, when they look at this, if you ask the question, what science is it that explains the web? Because if we look at the environment in which the web has evolved, we know that neither the web nor the world that uses the web is static. That the web actually then responds to needs and changes that occur within society. And it refers, it also, you know, responds to things such as advancements in science, advancements in commerce, the public, politics, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of different fields have an impact on the development and the evolution of the web. So there really is no one science. Now, clearly one aspect that people say, well, isn't it computer science? Well, I'm going to try to prove to you that maybe at the smallest level, it is computer science, the technology that controls it. But the way in which it's evolved and the way that it is used far surpasses what can be typically explained in computer science alone. So it's not simply a computer science phenomenon, so therefore we would not think that web science is strictly a subset of computer science. All right? So the other question is sort of the other side of the coin, is that what disciplines, and I misspelled disciplines, I noticed that, what disciplines, actually there's maybe a Freudian slip there because it says disciples. I guess I am a disciple of it, but I promise you I'm not the clever enough to really do that. That should be, what disciplines can the web give insight into? And these, besides computer science and engineering, that's obvious, I'm going to try to prove to you that can also give very meaningful insights into fields such as sociology, psychology, mathematics, biology, etc. In fact, we could have a little bit of a competition and see if anyone can name a discipline that has not in some way been impacted by web technology. Is it working now? Okay. Okay, so here's the definition of web science. It's basically to say is that if we can make the assumption that the web is a new technical and social phenomena, and then instead of thinking about it as a collection of technology, let's think about it as an organism. And this is not too far-fetched. The science fiction people have been doing that for years, you know, when they talk about cyberspace and things such as that. So it's not really out of the realm of possibility to talk about it or think about it as an organism. And so if you believe that, if you take those givens, then we could assert that the web needs to be studied as an organism, not based on really what it contains, and understood, and possibly in that case be engineered. Right? If we can understand it, if we can understand it like a science, then what follows from a science is an engineering. Okay? And I say here that this is not to be confused with computer science, as we've always wanted to say, or not to be confused with the concept of how do you do science on the web or with the web. So, basically then, the definition is that web science is a new field, a totally new science, it's multidisciplinary, and it allows us to understand the web and the relationships that society now has with the web. And it began formally as a science with the formation, as I said, of the Web Science Trust in about 2006. To go a little bit further, it's not, as I say, just about technology, because it's a new science that also focuses on applications that are in those disciplines that we feel either affect the web or are affected by the web. And so therefore, it really has to do with how do you reflect a fundamental curiosity about the web? And how can it possibly help to answer that question with respect to its relevance to society? The web conference series started in 2009. I'll say a little bit more about that. Now, in this particular slide, I use Google Trends, which does a search and basically shows you trend lines, as it were, of interest in a particular search item. So I did a Google Trends for web science. And this is basically what I got. What I think we're seeing in this case is those spikes in some way are analogous to the web conference and the web science conferences. Clearly at that time when the whole field of web science draws some attention. Okay, so at what level do I want to differentiate web science from computer science? And I believe that it's actually a matter of scale. When you're talking about it at what I would refer to as the micro scale, then you are talking about protocols, you're talking about languages like HTML, you're talking about engineering, how you put together web pages, websites, web servers, etc. Okay, so it is computer science. But the web goes a lot further than that because, you know, it does not remain as a single function or a single program. Its real strength comes to the point where people start linking pages, start linking things together, start linking information together. And therefore, it becomes a larger system of interaction between pages, between users, between data, etc. And that's what is referred to at the macro scale. And that's where it gets its very interesting complexity, and that's really where it gets its more scientific relationship. Okay? So when we say like this, then at the micro scale is where the engineering occurs. You know, it's where you have an idea for a website, where you put together the technology for the website, where you consider how people are going to use it. But then when you start linking it to other sites or linking it to systems and analyzing its behavior, then, and adding creativity, as I said, that's where it becomes a science. Okay? Now let me give you a quick little example. This is not one of the examples that I've got later on. But for those of you who have designed websites, designed web pages, what are the rules for how many links you can put coming outbound from a web page? How many links can you have? That's a trick question. You can have as many links as you want. You got to have it. Usually have to have at least one. If you don't have one link, then nobody's going to be able to get from your page to another page. But otherwise, you can have as many links as you want. So, if every page on the web can have an arbitrary number of links on the, you know, to other pages, then what would you expect the relationship between pages to be? What would you expect the topology of the web to look like? It should be perfectly random, right? But in reality, it's not. It follows a power distribution. So something else is going on there. Even though you don't think about it when you link one page to another, in reality, something in the process of linking pages to create knowledge or to create paths that people can follow does in fact follow some kind of natural law. So the suggestion is that perhaps there is an underlying science that's underneath the web. Okay, why study web science? Well, here's a couple of possible rationales. Is to really understand how the web operates, because I don't think we pretend to know how it operates, and to understand how it might evolve, to try to understand what's referred to the deep web. You know, this is typically the parts of the web that we can't see, the parts of the web that search engines can't get to, that are hidden in databases. And we know very little about them. We know really don't have a clear idea of how big the web is. You'll see estimates of how many billions of pages there are out there. Nobody really knows. Okay? We might have a better idea of how many stars there are in the universe than we know about how many pages there are on the web. Search. You know, how can the web's data best be used? There's an enormous amount of data on the web. Far more data than, you know, has been created, as it were, since the beginning of time. Virtually everything's on the web. You know, how can we effectively utilize that data? How do you deal with the social interactions, like social networks? What is the topology of the web? And here's the biggest question, too. We've got this amazing thing called the World Wide Web. Are we really using it to the fullest extent that we possibly can? What are some things about the web that we are not using that we could possibly benefit from knowing? That's a pretty exciting prospect right there. And then, of course, there's the other ones. How can we understand the impact of the web on business models? E-commerce students know about that. You know, how has that changed commerce? Legal issues and societal issues. How people use the web. I mean, people use the web in a lot of different ways. People use it for directed purposes. People just surf for entertainment. You know, there's a lot of different techniques. There's a lot of different reasons why people like to get on the web. Another thing I want to say is web science is bidirectional. We're not just learning about the web, but we are using the web. This is going to be in my example. We're using the web as a laboratory, as an ecosystem, to study other kinds of phenomena, especially phenomena that are related to other disciplines. And I hope I can prove to you that that truly is one of the amazing aspects that we can see in web science. Okay? Another question with respect to it is, what's the appeal of things like Facebook or social networking? Why has that become so popular? What is it that has captured the imagination and the use of people? Okay? That's not a technical question. How's the web going to affect the way we do science, web of objects, big data? These, as I say, none of these aren't exclusively technical questions. And so, therefore, we wouldn't expect them to have technical answers. And certainly, we would not expect the computer scientists and the computer engineers to be the ones who answer these kinds of questions. This is a famous diagram that started with respect to the Web Science Trust. It really shows what's called a collision of disciplines. So it's the idea, once again, here are a few of the disciplines that have dramatically been affected by the web. Clearly, computer science is in the middle of there, but engineering, mathematics, psychology, media, law, all of these have been affected in the web, by the web in some way, either affecting the work they do, the practice, the research they do, etc. And the fact that they have been affected by the web also suggests that they affect the web. So that's that bidirectional argument where I made, is you really can also, how can you use the web to enhance, as it were, studies of these disciplines? And I like to think that all of these disciplines are like cells, biological cells, and they've got their own DNA. They've got their own language. Lawyers talk legalese as opposed to what computer scientists talk and what sociologists talk. And what they continue to do is that they have difficulty exchanging this DNA. It's difficult for them to talk to each other. When computer scientists start talking about TCP/IP and things like that, lawyers don't know what they're talking about. So how can you come up with some sort of common language? Because we have the web in common, so how can we come up with a common language such that we can communicate about these issues? Okay? Another way of looking at it is like this, is thinking about the web as being an intersection, a part of a big puzzle that includes the use of information, its impact on society, how society forms communities, and then all of this driven by advancements in the internet. Okay? So all of these elements, not just the disciplines like we saw in one description, but also are like pieces of a puzzle that fit together, presumably, for the benefit, for our benefit. Okay, so the goals of web science is to understand what the web is, to understand how it operates, to possibly, if we can understand it, learn how to engineer its future, ensure its social benefit, and to effectively use it as a tool. These are pretty ambitious goals with respect to the use of the technology. And that's why I make the comment. You know, this is a new kind of science. This is not a science that perhaps could have imagined 50 years ago. Because we're not talking about these traditional ideas of science where you have theoretical and then followed by experimental. We certainly see now that there are a lot of things that deal with computational science or data-driven science that don't necessarily have the equations and the strict structure that you have in what might be in some of the existing sciences. We're never really going to try to find, say, a set of equations that describes how the web operates. It's not that kind of a science. Okay? And so I think that what the web is doing is it is exploring new ideas or exploring new territory in science and technology. There's a lot of room for research. There's a lot of room for collaboration in web science. Not only among scientists and application builders, but, as we said, people from other disciplines. But clearly, in order to make this work, one thing you have to think about is how do you teach it? How do you spread the word about web science? How do you go about teaching webiety? This is the web society. That's not my term. How do you teach that kind of thing? And as I said, some institutions are really starting to think about it, really sort of realizing, once again, it's not computer science. It's not one of these other disciplines. It is, in fact, a discipline that is capable of standing on its own. How do you teach that? How might you have that in a curriculum? And this, for example, is what's being done in the case at the University of Southampton, who were certainly one of the pioneers with respect to web science. They actually now have an undergraduate and graduate degree program in web science. And basically, this is the format of their curriculum. You know, looking at it once again, starting from what is the web, which might, to the first order, for a lot of people, sound like a pretty silly question. How is it made? But then understanding its impact from a lot of different perspectives, like, for example, its impact within a lot of different disciplines. What are the research questions? How do you undertake research on the web? What does that mean? And then, of course, actually individual studies. What are your particular individual areas of interest? So it looks like, really, as it were, really a traditional type of curriculum, but its focus is on understanding the science of the web. And so, for example, I thought this is interesting, is here are some of the PhD topics that Southampton currently has actively in web science. So if you look at the titles of these topics, you can see once again this crossover between computer science and these other disciplines. So for example, Principles of Governance for Open Scientific and Government Law is a crossover between law, computer science, and linguistics. Social web, social behavior, and complex adaptive networks is a collaboration between computer science and psychology. Another one, computer science and social statistics, computer science and criminology, management and computer science, and sociology and computer science. You're seeing then that for topics like this, they do not fit in either one solely of these disciplines, and so therefore, as it were, cross over in those disciplines in a way that is defined by the web. Okay? Now, this is another version of that same diagram that you saw before. But what it does is it really shows now which ones of these sciences are embracing, which one of these disciplines are embracing web science. And so, for example, if you see the ones that are green, they have actively embraced web science. There's lots of participation with web science in there. So, for example, sociology, if you look back at that previous slide. In yellow, there's moderate. So, for example, you can expect that people that are interested in media are also going to be interested in web technology. And then the ones that are red have very low participation at this point. Economics, biology, and law have not really perhaps understood the issues that are surrounding their particular discipline and the way it interfaces with the web. Okay, now the examples I'm going to choose have to do with web science and the social sciences, because they are, in fact, one of the big adopters, as it were, of web science. And basically, it shows, or at least this particular definition as we had, you know, shows how web science perhaps fits very well to what the goals of sociologists are, because they study behavior, they study interaction. Not perhaps to the same order in which it happens at the web in a different way. Okay? So what they have in some ways seen the possibility of doing is studying the web, namely the online world, as a mechanism for understanding the kind of behaviors and interactions that occur in the offline world. Okay? Now, the two examples that I've got is one is the idea of sociograms or small world phenomena. Okay? Now, I'm sure that everybody in here has heard about the concept of 6 degrees of separation. It basically says that you are connected with everyone else on the planet through 6 links. Okay? But how do you prove something like that? Is it possible to prove something like that? Some of this work, you know, is done, what a sociogram, and this idea has been around a long time, was social graphs. Not necessarily the social graphs that you think about in terms of Facebook or something of that nature. But the idea, once again, that shows the kinds of relationships that people can have, such as social relations, communication, social influence, etc. That's what the lines between nodes might represent. So to show interaction. And that's what the work of Jacob Marino is, or was. Stanley Milgram is the guy who came up with the idea about 6 degrees of separation. So the question is, if you take these ideas, which are very popular in social sciences, and you can't prove them in social sciences. Is it possible that you could use the web as a viable laboratory for studying those phenomena? And the second example I've got is what I call augmented intelligence through crowdsourcing. Now, if you know about the concept of crowdsourcing, it says basically using the resources of a group of people on the internet, engage them into doing some kind of task. Give them a job to do. Okay? Now, very often you might do that because it's a job, one, that nobody wants to do, or it's pretty meaningless job or menial job. Or secondly, it's one perhaps that really does a great deal, requires a great deal of effort that can be spread out over a whole crowd. That's what the idea of crowdsourcing means. Now, what does augmented intelligence mean? Augmented intelligence, as opposed to artificial intelligence, basically says, how can you amplify intelligence? So the question here that could be asked, once again, that would be difficult to prove, is that how can you measure the wisdom or the intelligence of the crowd? If you're asking a group of people to do a task for you, is there any way that you can somehow gauge how intelligent that group is and therefore capable of doing a complex task that you give them? Now, that's a pretty interesting concept. Once again, one that without the resources you see on the web would be pretty difficult to do. Okay, now the first one, we talked about sociograms. Well, quite frankly, if you look at this and you say, okay, Facebook's got approximately 900 million users. Okay? They have a social graph. They have an API, a programming interface to that social graph. What could be better than this for studying the concept of sociograms or trying to answer the small world problem? Okay? The other thing, too, is that Facebook generates terabytes of data a day, you know, within this social network. What can we learn from this data? How can we take advantage of this data, especially if Facebook is making it available to us, to understand the kinds of relationships that might exist between Facebook users? And that's exactly what a number of researchers have done in looking at this small world problem. So, 6 degrees of separation, is that true? Stanley Milgram convinces us that it's true. Popular games such as 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, people got into that and somehow got convinced that, hey, maybe there's something is to that. But is it true? How can you prove it? And so one thing, for example, that Facebook did is it looked at, in this case, what is the distribution of the number of friends that people have? And it looked like something like this. You know, clearly you've got the majority of people have maybe got around 100 friends. Right? And then when you get up to, say, over 500 to 1,000 or something of that nature, they're increasingly smaller numbers of people who have that many connections. Probably for very good reason. Nobody really has that many friends, I think, in that case. So with that kind of data, how can you perhaps explore this problem? Well, what a number of researchers did is, by looking at this Facebook number, is they actually found, this Facebook data rather, they actually found that 99.6% of all pairs of users are connected by paths with 5 degrees. In other words, only 6 hops between them. And 92% of users are connected by only 4 degrees. 5 hops between them. Okay? So what does that say about 6 degrees of separation? Maybe it says that 6 is lenient. You know, 6 is not wrong, but it certainly suggests that it can be less than 6. 6 is a safe number in some ways. And as Facebook has grown, the average number of hops has reduced. In 2008, it was 5.28. And in 2011, it went to 4.74. What's the significance of that? Is that clearly now we're looking at a larger population. And clearly, if you believe in scientific principles, the larger your sample population is, the better your results. So has this proven, or disproven, as it were, the concept in sociograms and small networks, like Stanley Milgram? Well, to some extent it has. But in fact, it has shown it empirically in a way that was never been able to do before. Okay? That you were never able to do before. By using the data on the web as a laboratory. Okay? But then, of course, the natural question would come up and say, you know, if the goal of sociologists in web science is to say, you know, we want to see how well the online world reflects the offline world, well, you come up with something like, you find something like this. 25% of all Facebook users make up 75% of all friendship links. Now, that number in and of itself is very interesting, because I'm sure that most of you are familiar with the old Pareto principle, you know, where 20% of the population owns 80% of the assets. And, hey, this is looking awfully like that with respect to the distribution of friends on the web. So if this is true, what we see here with respect to that data, is there an actual correlation between the online world, what Facebook is going to be telling us, and the 6 degrees of separation that Stanley Milgram might have been telling us in the offline world? Okay. There's no clear answer to that, but at least now we have more of a research-oriented examination of that particular issue. The second example that I mentioned was the intelligence of the crowd. A group of Microsoft researchers in web science decided to use the Amazon Mechanical Turk. Now, Mechanical Turk is a facility that actually you can pay people small amounts of money to do things for you. Okay? You like, you know, sort tables of data or something of that nature. And so you can actually then pay them in order to distribute a task, you know, to get a task done hopefully quickly or effectively or efficiently or whatever. But what this group of researchers did is that said that we're not going to give these workers on Mechanical Turk an ordinary task. We're going to give these workers on Mechanical Turk an IQ test. Right? So what the goal would be is that if we can, in fact, then give these workers standard tests and use them as a proxy, then maybe we can come up with what could be viewed as a collective or a crowd IQ. You know, which hopefully is going to be higher than it would for one of the individuals. So the crowd then is going to enable me effectively to hire a really smart person instead of maybe just someone, a really smart virtual person, instead of just someone who is perhaps of average intelligence. Now, that's an interesting concept. Once again, it's looking at an application of using the web as a laboratory, because how else are you going to be able to do something like this, especially for large populations? And there's a number of other factors affecting this, tied to what the way that Mechanical Turk works, such as payment. Clearly, a lot of people do it for the money. Number of workers per task. Worker reputation. And what kind of rejection rules do you have in terms of filtering out the quality of the work that someone does? So basically what happened in this study is this is an example of the kinds of jobs that they gave to these workers on Mechanical Turk. And this is effectively something from a standardized IQ test. And you just gave it to these people. Now listen, this is a pretty interesting phenomenon because you're paying people to take an IQ test. And it's anonymous, so nobody's going to be embarrassed. But they might actually then make a little bit of money. All right? No rejections for correct answers. Don't spam. All the kinds of rules, the filtering rules that you would want to have in a crowdsourced task. And here's the result. The crowd IQ as a function of workers for a, what do you look at the elements, questions of that test, as a human intelligence task. And with all payments included, and with the reputation of the workers exceeding 90%, you could see then that for that particular task, the crowd IQ for this group got up to 150. That's pretty good. That in all probability is going to be greater than the probability of any of the individual workers. So it is effectively saying in some ways, if you had a job that in some ways required intelligence, then in fact you could have some greater insurance that the crowd would be able, or better able, to perform that job. So once again, this is an interesting sociological example that takes the concepts of web science. It's using the technology of the web to address an open question in sociology, or maybe this is actually psychology, for an IQ test. So, as far as the status of web science, here are my conclusions. There is growing interest. Certainly the people who are really evangelists of web science would like to see it growing a lot faster. A lot of very major institutions are getting involved in web science. Southampton, MIT, Oxford, etc. So there is that academic belief in web science. But then, that's the overgoing question, is that if you have a degree in web science, can you get a job? What are you going to do with it? Okay? You don't see many employers looking for web scientists. And part of that might be, in fact, because they don't know what web science is all about. And we've seen here that some very interesting work, like the two examples I gave, I think are fascinating examples. Some very interesting work has been done. And what also clearly needs to happen is have comparable work or comparable initiatives in some of these other types of disciplines. So here are the challenges, I think, that we can look at, you know, as far as the status of web science. it has already suggested and hopefully been proven that can affect that the web can be used as a laboratory. And we should be able to use non-technology specific concepts, you know, in these other disciplines. There was nothing that was really computer science oriented in either of those other two studies. Either the one with the small world problem or crowd intelligence. Now, I didn't use terms like HTML and, you know, all these other kinds of things that might be, you know, more common, as it were, to CS people. And it also suggests then is that if we do studies like this, that maybe we can engineer the web as a better way of providing mechanisms for that, and to understand more about how web technology has changed people's interactions. Neither one of those two studies really did that, with the exception of the fact that crowdsourcing maybe was a phenomenon that was not really possible before network computing. And then one other thing is, just like one of the goals of the Web Science Trust was, we may be able, hopefully, to predict the way the web evolves, which we really can't do now because of the fact it's influenced by so many different disciplines. Now, one thing that the Web Science Trust has done is created what's called the Web Science Trust Network. And basically what this is are institutions and academics and researchers around the world who are interested in web science, who want to use web science, who want to collaborate with others in web science. And they work on items such as curricula. They put together summer schools and have meetings, possibly even host the annual Web Science Conference. Okay? All of these kinds of things that really attempt to spread the word, to create buzz about web science. And here are some of the members right now of the Web Science Trust. And Xinghua is working with Southampton for one in Shenzhen. But Hong Kong is blatantly missing. So this is my call to action. And that is, given the number of outstanding universities and research facilities in Hong Kong, how can we get Hong Kong interested in the value and the research and the potential of web science? Here's a couple of references. First is the Web Science Trust website. The next Web Science Conference is May of next year in Paris. Everybody likes to go to Paris. The call for papers is not open yet, so maybe some of you might consider submitting a paper. There's always a web science track at the International Web Conference, which next year is in Rio. So once again, this is an opportunity to learn more about web science, to rub shoulders with the people that are researching in web science. And look at that, 2 weeks in a row, not quite 2 weeks in a row, but wouldn't it be great to go to Paris and then when you leave Paris, go to Rio? God, you really feel like a movie star if you're traveling around like that. Okay? But these are some of the active initiatives. This is actually some of the places where you can learn more about web science and the way that people are using it. So thank you very much.